Today's program is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, Happy New Year. Welcome to 2015.
Happy New Year, indeed. What's happening in 2015?
Oh, man, there's a lot going on. First of all, I will say that Chris and I went our separate ways for the holidays. Chris has been in Hong Kong for 2 weeks.
It was sad. I was not myself.
He's a little jet-lagged right now, about 13 hours. And I hit Atlanta for 5 days, which was awesome and exciting. We're going to have to save that for a future show, but I did hit 6 breweries and brew pubs in Atlanta, and it was super exciting. I had some absolutely delicious beer and good times with my family. Anyway, we'll have some more. We're going to have some Atlanta brewing shows because they're doing some really exciting stuff down there. There's some very restrictive laws that I personally feel, and a lot of Georgia craft brewers feel, need to be changed. So we're going to talk about that with one of the owners of Atlanta Brewery.
I also did a lot of pub crawling in Hong Kong. And as you know, last year we interviewed Rohit from Happy...
Young Master
Young
Ales.
Master Ales. I keep wanting to call him Happy Feet because
yes,
his logo is... Anyway, yeah, from Young Master Ales. He's doing really well. The beers are amazing. And the Hong Kong craft brewing scene is really popping off. But I will say this, that not everybody's cleaning their lines. And it's really unfortunate that, you know, it's not keeping the integrity of the brewer's art, and that part of the education in Hong Kong is slacking, except if you go to the Globe. When we finally hit the Globe, which is run by Patrick Gatherer and Toby Cooper, it was like an oasis in the desert. The beer was clean, fresh, and exactly as the brewers intended. I talked to them, and they clean their lines every week. It's awesome to taste it fresh. It was amazing. It makes me really sad to drink good beer out of dirty lines, is what I'm saying. And it does injustice to the whole craft beer community on the whole. So clean your lines.
Absolutely. All right. So a couple of local events that are really cool and important that are coming up. So the first is Brew for Autism, which is put on by two clubs, Poor Standards and Richmond County Beer Club, our Staten Island homebrewing brothers and sisters. So they are having an event on January 24th at Snug Harbor's Great Hall in Staten Island from noon to 4. All proceeds will be going to Autism Speak. There will be a selection of home and craft beer, and you can purchase tickets at brewforautism.com. I believe that Kuzmi and I will have at least one beverage there.
That's right. And speaking of Homebrew Alley 9 is coming up in early February. Registration is up if you would like to enter any homebrew and get great feedback. It's one of the largest homebrew competitions on the East Coast, you can go to homebrewalley.com. You can register up until January 22nd. You can register your entries and deliver them. But we also, if you don't have beer to submit, we need help with judging and stewarding competition. You can sign up at the same website, homebrewalley.com. And after that, on February 22nd, we are having Brunity. Brunity event at the Bell House. Brunity is basically kind of like a big collective of the local homebrew clubs and stores and anybody in the New York City region, and we are gathering under one roof to benefit a local charity, in this case, City Harvest. And we'll have a small little showcase of the homebrew community from 1 to 5 p.m. on February 22nd. You can go to brunity.com to find out more information, but I just looked, and actually the link to buy tickets is not up on that. I will fix that tonight, I promise.
Or early tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah. It is early tomorrow morning for me.
That's true. All right, so back to the regularly scheduled programming. So we mentioned at the end of last year that I'm a little bit excited about shrubs. So I made a shrub to go with our Thanksgiving dinner, an apple kind of shrub. A shrub is a drinking vinegar beverage. And then I also made it when I went home to visit my parents over the December holidays. And I'm very excited about shrubs. So I was super excited to see that last fall, a new book called Shrubs, An Old-Fashioned Drink for Modern Times, was written by Michael Dietsch. And we are very lucky to have him on the line. Michael, are you there?
I am here.
Awesome.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to Ferment About.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. What is your background and what turned you on to shrubs?
I am a writer and a stay-at-home dad. I have been a cocktail geek for probably close to 10 years now. And I fell into writing about it first, you know, in an amateur way on my blog, adashofbitters.com, if you don't mind the plug.
No, absolutely not. We welcome them. It's a good resource.
I wrote about it there for a while, gradually started taking on some paid writing work that became regular paid writing work, and almost 2 years ago now, I got approached to write a book on shrubs. I met shrubs as a concept, as a drinking thing, in New Orleans at Tales of the Cocktail seven years ago. I had heard of them. I was aware that shrubs were out there, that they were a drinking vinegar that you could have on their own or mixed into a cocktail, but I had never actually tasted one. And I was out with some friends walking around the city, and it was July in New Orleans, so of course it was very hot and very humid, and I was going to a reception at the hotel that hosted Tales, and so I left the city streets feeling sticky and gross and disgusting, and I didn't quite have enough time to get back to my room to freshen up, so I went straight into this reception, and the first thing I was handed was a cocktail made with shrubs. It was a I believe a raspberry shrub with cachaça and lime juice and I forget what else was in it, but it was hands down one of the most delicious things I drank at Tales of the Cocktail that year. And it was one of the first things I drank. And I thought that it was delicious, and my wife was home. We were in Providence, Rhode Island at the time. She was back in Rhode Island, and when I got back to Rhode Island, I made certain that I made her a shrub and tried to recreate this recipe. Raspberries were no longer at the farmer's market, but I was able to get, you know, blackberries, I think, and some gooseberries, and so I made a shrub with those, and it started an obsession, and I've been obsessed with them since.
Awesome.
And it says a lot that, Tales is, that's one of the biggest conventions for mixologists and for flavor makers, taste makers in the beverage world that in the U.S., right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a 5-day event in New Orleans, second, third week of July. It attracts bartenders, spirits representatives, distillers, sales reps, PR people, journalists, the general public, and people come in from around the world for it. And it may be the biggest cocktail gathering in the world now, mm-hmm. not just in the United States. It's the place to be if you have a product to sell, if you have a book to promote, if you have a bar that's just opened that you want people to know about. If you're a bartender trying to seek a national reputation, it's the place to be. And for this shrub cocktail to be one of the best things that I tasted during that week was kind of phenomenal to me because I tasted some, I tasted a lot of really good drinks that week. I drank a lot that week.
No doubt. How could you not?
but I drank, you know, I drank some really good cocktails, but the Chrub one stood out to me so much. It was the only one that I was like just itching to get home and make for my wife.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So let's backtrack. So I did mention that Chrubs are basically drinking vinegars. So let's go through. I'm actually going to reference. You were on the lovely Linda Palacio's show, A Taste of the Past.
Where can I find that?
It was episode 183. So you can find it on heritageradionetwork.org. So I did want to say you did a great job of talking about, I'm going to reference that show for the history and of the origin of the Chrub. But what basically is a Chrub?
A Chrub is... it's called an acidulated beverage, which just means that it's a beverage made with an acid ingredient. And lemonade is an acidulated beverage, the acid being lemon juice. So acidulated beverages are a common concept to us. People think that drinking vinegar is unusual or strange, but it's not really. I mean, we've been drinking sour things, bitter things for all of our existence, really.
Absolutely.
So it's a beverage. Today it's made of vinegar. Historically it was originally made with lemon juice or orange juice. There are historical reasons why it switched over to being vinegar, some of which I talked about on Linda's program. But now they are predominantly made with vinegar, a fruit or a vegetable of some sort, and sugar. You can add some spices in there or herbs. I have recipes in the book that call for rosemary, lavender. I've got a blueberry lavender Chrub that I love making every year when the blueberries are fresh. And the time of the year when you walk to the farmer's market, you walk in and you can smell the lavender and you're like, still 50 feet away from the farmer's market booth. When I smell that, that's when I know I need to make blueberry lavender Chrub.
Awesome. I too am looking forward to making it next spring.
it's a beverage that's made from vinegar, fruit or vegetables, and sugar.
Awesome. And I just want to say, for any naysayers out there, I think I first had a Chrub probably 15 to 20 years ago. And I can't remember the purveyor. I think it was either at an herb show or a flower show or something like that. And I was a little skeptical. And like I said, you know, when enjoying the show, I'm absolutely obsessed with them. But look at the popularity of sour beers, of other beverages. I thought it was very interesting because in your book, you actually talk about kind of why, you know, drinking these acidic beverages like lemonade or Chrubs are so beneficial. Not only are they very thirst-quenching, but you talk a little bit about how it actually stimulates your saliva.
Yeah, what happens is that when you're thirsty and starting to get dehydrated, obviously your mouth is drying out, and you feel parched, and you feel run down and tired. And this was exactly what happened to me in New Orleans. I was outside, I was sweating, I was hot, my mouth was dry. I walked in, I got this cocktail, and the vinegar and the lime juice hit receptors in my mouth that caused me to salivate, and it made me feel refreshed because the saliva just kind of flooded my mouth with liquid, and I felt like I was refreshed and no longer dehydrated.
Absolutely.
And the other thing about that is that the flood of saliva in your mouth then triggers your stomach to expect food, and so it stimulates the appetite. It doesn't just it wakes up the palate. It stimulates your appetite. So drinks that are a little sour are really good to drink before a meal because it preps your body to expect, hey, something good is going to come my way. You know, so a sour beer before dinner is a good thing. A cocktail with a bit of acidity to it is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I tend to steer away from really sweet drinks before dinner or creamy drinks before dinner because those dull the palate
right.
and dull the appetite. You know, those are the biggest advantages of that. You know, they make you feel refreshed and they stimulate your appetite.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a break on that note, and we'll be right back with more about making shrubs, using them, and all kinds of associated.
Ferment about it.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Ferment About It. We're talking to Michael Dietsch about shrubs. So we're going to get back to the basics of shrub making.
Okay.
So tell us kind of the very basics of if somebody is looking to make a shrub at home, what's going on
here? We just talked about just a sugar, a fruit, or what is your approaches to finding the flavors that you want and finding the balance of a shrub? What is the balance of a shrub? Where should it lean? Or is it open? Fair play.
It's the nice thing about shrub making is that it's very versatile. You can go a variety of directions with it, depending on your palate, depending on your taste buds, and depending on the ingredients that you're working with. When I started making shrubs, the basic idea was to go with equal parts fruit, sugar, and vinegar. So, for example, you would start with 2 cups of blackberries, 2 cups of sugar, and 2 cups of some kind of vinegar. We'll talk about the vinegar in a moment, the choice of vinegar. And so what you do, there are a couple of different methods for doing this. The first method that I tried was a method called hot process, where you take the berries, you mash them. You can use just a potato masher or a spoon or something. You mash them in a pot on the stove with sugar and maybe a splash of water. You turn the burner on. You let that cook until it forms a cooked syrup. The fruit juice cooks out, melts in with the sugar, and everything just sort of blends into a syrup. You let that cool. You strain it off, and then you add your vinegar. That's a great way to make shrub. But then a couple of years after I was making shrub that way, I was introduced to something called the cold process. And the cold process is a little different, although it's very similar. You take your fruit or berry, you know, your fruit or your berries or whatever. You crush them. You put some sugar on them. But instead of cooking them, you cover them with plastic wrap in a bowl. And you either put them in your refrigerator overnight or you let them sit out on the counter, depending on what you're working with, and you let the sugar pull the juices out of the fruit. So the sugar is macerating the fruit and pulling the juices out and forming a syrup. Then you strain that off and add the vinegar, stir everything together or shake it up or whatever. The advantage of the cold process, to me, is that it produces a brighter tasting shrub. The fruit doesn't get cooked, and so it tastes fresher, it tastes brighter, it tastes newer, even months later. You know, if a if a strawberry shrub sits in your refrigerator for 6 months, it's going to start to lose some of its strawberry-ness.
Right.
But it's still going to taste pretty good. But if you cook a strawberry shrub, it's going to start to taste less strawberry-like after a week or two. So I prefer the cold process method. I know people who still prefer the hot process method, and that's fine. It's whatever works for you, and that's the nice thing about shrub making. So I started with an even ratio of one part fruit, one part vinegar, one part sugar.
And is this
these days? I do two parts fruit, one sugar, one vinegar. So if I start with 2 cups of berries or peaches or whatever, I'll use a cup of sugar and a cup of vinegar. As far as the vinegars go, you can go a number of different directions depending on what you like and what works well with the fruit. Apple cider vinegar tends to be my workhorse these days, although when I started, red wine vinegar was my workhorse, but I decided that was a little bit too forward. Mm-hmm. But red wine vinegar works very well with jammy fruits like cherries, certain berries, plums. You get those richer, jammier flavors. Red wine vinegar works well with them. If you've got something lighter, like peaches or apricots, I like a white wine vinegar or champagne vinegar. Apple cider vinegar will pair with almost anything that you make a shrub with. So I have a lot of recipes in the book that call for apple cider vinegar, and that's simply because as I was developing the recipes and testing them, I knew it would work.
Right.
But then you can take cues from what people are doing in restaurant kitchens, what chefs are up to. And so there's a strawberry balsamic recipe in my book because strawberries and balsamic vinegar work well together. Mm-hmm. A recipe that's not in the book that I created and tested a couple of months ago is I made a pineapple and coconut vinegar shrub
that
we liked very well. And then you can experiment with herbs. Like I mentioned, the blueberry lavender shrub before. You know, you can do thyme, you can do rosemary, you can do sage. There are all sorts of things you can do. And then you can take shrubs in a more savory direction. I've got recipes for tomato shrubs, beet shrubs.
Yeah, the golden beet and coriander shrub, I am dying to try. So I'm going to pick up some golden beets as soon as possible. Maybe Wednesday's Union Square Green Market.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, the beet and coriander I was very pleased with that. I came up with that. I think my wife and I were talking about it, and she might have suggested it. And I was like, I've got to try that. And then I put it together, and it was very satisfying, very tasty. There are all sorts of combinations that you can try, things that you think will work well together, you know. So it's just a matter of experimenting, you know, tasting as you go along, and just having some fun with it.
Now, let's talk about what to do with shrubs. So when I made the spiced apple shrub that I made a couple times this winter so far, I've just been enjoying with seltzer. But as you mentioned in the beginning, you can also make cocktails. You have a great variety of classic cocktails that you make with shrubs, as well as some kind of nouveau cocktails and sodas in your book. And I mean, these absolutely sound fantastic. You can make wonderful cocktails, but you can also just drink them as a non-alcoholic beverage. So what are some of your favorite kind of combinations or favorite things that you like to do?
There are a few things. When we started drinking shrubs, we drank a lot of them in that summer, in the remaining summer months after I came back from Tales. And what we were doing with them then was we were mixing them with vermouth and sherry, vermouth or sherry, and having these really light sort of aperitif beverages. And those are delicious, just hands down delicious, especially with some of the new, not new, but new to the American market, vermouths like Dolan Blanc and things like that. Shrubs are fantastic with vermouth. They're great as a non-alcoholic drink. The second year that I started making, I was really into shrubs. My wife was pregnant, and so she drank a lot of them while she was pregnant with just seltzer water. Mm-hmm. And then when I was writing the book, she was pregnant with our second child, and so as I was making and testing shrubs, she had something to drink while I was trying not to be a jerk by drinking bourbon in front of her. Shrubs work well with a variety of boozes. I'm sorry, my brain went blank there for a second.
Well, on the taste,
A strawberry shrub with tequila is like one of the most heavenly combinations you can come up with.
Yeah,
tequila and strawberries just have a natural affinity for each other.
White tequila.
Yeah. I have a recipe in the book for a float, an ice cream float. We took a little chocolate ice cream and put a dark cherry shrub on it, and just topped that off with some soda water.
Fantastic. When you were on the show for the Taste of the Past, you talked about kind of the history of blending shrubs with booze, and the booze back then, particularly the rum and the brandy, were of different quality, so there were different reasons for blending. I mean, basically you were
disguising the harshness of the alcohol.
the alcohol back then, rum was what, when shrub was introduced to the West, rum was just an infant, and it was from all accounts just horrible. And the only way you could drink it was by masking with something. We were all college students once. We know what that's like. you get cheap, crappy booze, and you have to mask it with something. So, and today's rums are obviously of a much higher quality, but they still pair very well with shrub. I love rum paired with like a cherry shrub or a plum, a shrub that's already got a fruit that's very rich and hearty and juicy and flavor forward. That pairs not really, really well with a dark rum.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds delicious. So I have to say, as fermenter, so Chris and I have, we have various projects going on, but we had a cider project that we got a little bit lazy about, and we had 2.5 gallons of apple cider turn into apple cider vinegar.
Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans.
Yes. Well, it turns out to be delicious apple cider vinegar. But I think that's a very easy thing for people that ferment alcohol to do, is to make vinegar. And I'm going to say, if you're listening and you're interested in making vinegar, we did talk about it on episode 11. Popular Science magazine also has a great article online I'm going to tweet as soon as we're done with the show, that will give some guidance to making vinegars. So that's a great, I feel like shrubs, not only are they delicious, but they're also a great way to use a vinegar that you make at home. There are also some very nice vinegars on the market. I know Bragg's is an apple cider vinegar that is unfiltered, I believe it's unpasteurized.
You can culture a mother from a Bragg's apple cider vinegar.
And oddly enough, I made this shrub for my dad while I was in Atlanta for the holidays. And Heinz now has an unfiltered apple cider vinegar with the mother in it, which I was kind of surprised about.
I've picked that up.
It's pretty good.
The Bragg's is what I use almost all the time.
Yeah.
I'm actually fascinated by the idea of making vinegar. It's not something that I was able to get around to for the book because I just had so much work to do with the book itself that I couldn't even wrap my head around the concept of having some vinegar vinegar is going.
Yeah.
We did it by accident. How hard can it be?
It isn't very hard.
Like a happy
accident.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. It's delicious.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, it's interesting. I don't want to go too long, but it's interesting that you say that because winemakers, as you probably know, as I'm sure you know, as probably most of your listeners know, winemakers historically always had to find ways to stop their stuff from turning to vinegar. So, you know, what you're talking about makes perfect sense because it's like, you know, get to it in time, boom, it's vinegar.
Yeah. Especially if you let, I mean, even as beer makers, I had a sour beer phase going on for a while. So I had a lot of beers aging with different kinds of bacteria. And Acetobacter, which is the primary acidification mechanism in vinegar, is very common even in sour beers. I mean, it loves oxygen, it loves cool temperatures, and so a lot of times beers will also go towards that acidic side, and you can absolutely make beer into vinegar as well. I don't know, I feel like homemade beer vinegar, I guess it's malt vinegar, would actually work well in beverages as well. I don't necessarily know that the commercial malt vinegar, but I suspect home malt vinegar is a different story. I will say I just picked up a book called Sustainable Homebrewing by Amelia Slayton Loftus, and she has a really good section in there about making vinegar from your kind of failed batches of beer. So I would just give a plug for that. That's actually on sale on... get a Kindle version for only $1.99 right now. So it's called Sustainable Homebrewing. I haven't made any malt vinegar, but I would like to do that this winter as well.
I came across I never got a chance to track the person down or interview him, but I came across a mention somewhere of a chef whose name I'm forgetting, location I'm forgetting, who was doing some shrubs with some homemade or house-made beer vinegars.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated by that. But, again, like you said, I didn't feel like malt vinegar was going to work, or commercial malt vinegar was going to work for it. And it was just not something I was able to, that I was going to be able to replicate at home very easily, and so it was a rabbit hole that I just chose not to go down because I knew that it would like lead in a very different direction and distract me from the book. But I was that sounded fascinating to me, and if any of your listeners are experimenting with it, I would love to have them get in touch with me and let me know.
How do they get in touch with you, Michael?
A Dash of Bitters, all one word, @gmail.com, or I'm on Twitter at Deitch, DIETSCH. So those are probably the two best ways.
So do you have a shrub now that is kind of your like go-to shrub that you make more often, or you know you kind of fall back on?
That's a hard question. I haven't made any. I think the last thing I made was the pineapple coconut vinegar mm-hmm. shrub, and it's because I had some pineapple left over from another writing project that I had done, and I had a lot of it, so it was like I don't want to throw it away because I spend a lot of money on it,
right.
Buying pineapple in New York City in October.
Yeah,
you know. So I, you know, the thing that I. The thing that amazed me, I was doing some promotions on the book in Boston and Providence in early October, and I wanted to demonstrate how easy it was to make shrub. And I went to, for one signing, I had some pre-made shrubs already there, and that was what I used. And then I completely spaced on getting shrub for the next signing, so I was forced to use shrub that I was making from scratch right in front of people for the drinks that we were serving. So I went to a grocery store and I got some out of season blueberries and some turbinado sugar and some cider vinegar, and I stood in front of people with rubber gloves on, with a bowl in front of me, and just squeezed these blueberries into the bowl and just hit them with sugar and stirred them with my fingers. And I had a good tasting shrub in about 5 minutes.
That's awesome.
And so, I mean, I don't know if it's my go-to shrub, but it's such an easy thing to do that people could, like, literally go to the grocery store, come home, and have shrub within 15 minutes of starting, and just put it into a glass with some seltzer. So, you know, that would be my gateway shrub to recommend to people, would be to just buy whatever berries you can find, even if it's out of season, and just have fun with it, you know, because berries put off juice so easily. Blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, all of those just will just let off their juices so easily. Just, you know, all you have to do is crush them by hand and stir the sugar in there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I always feel like at the end, you know, kind of we sometimes go a little bit crazy at the grocery store or the green market when things are in season. And then I end up having to freeze, you know, those last little bits of berry. I just kind of put them all in a freezer bag and keep adding. And I think shrubs would be perfect for those, that frozen fruit that you have as well in the freezer.
That's, yeah, they would. Yeah, you can certainly easily make shrubs out of with frozen fruit.
Yep.
You know, even for heaven's sake, you could get some frozen fruit from, you know, Birdseye or whatever, and just let it thaw and make a shrub out of that.
Yep. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Michael Deitch, author of Shrubs, an Old-Fashioned Drink for Modern Times. I'm going to tell you that if you are interested in making shrubs or you get into it, this book is absolutely fantastic. I did buy the Kindle version so I can have it in my pocket so that it will – I always find, you know, these books are – I mean, this book is really inspiring. First of all, the history and kind of the tale of the shrub and how it has evolved over the time. It is a very kind of twisty tale, an interesting tale. But you have so many really good recipes. I'm not any kind of cocktail expert. I can homebrew and make short meads, but cocktails are definitely my weak point. But I feel pretty confident with this book in my pocket. So
well, thank you very much.
Yeah, no, I really think it's a wonderful book, and I am super excited about making a lot more shrubs in 2015.
Thanks for making life taste better.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. For all of you, please ferment on, and we will be back next Monday at 7 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Ferment
about it.
Ferment About It's theme song has been provided by Chris Kuzme.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.